You can visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney.
I can't believe this. My doctor said I'd be up and on my feet in 5 days. He was off by 199 years. And then where am I anyhow? I mean, what happened to everybody? Where are all my friends?
You must understand that everyone you knew in the past has been dead nearly 200 years.
But they all ate organic rice.
You are now in the year 2173. Well, you might as well know, Miles, that reviving you as we did was in strict opposition to government policy.
What we've done is highly illegal, Miles, and if we get caught, we'll be destroyed, along with you.
What do you mean, destroyed?
Your brain will be electronically simplified.
My brain? It's my second favorite organ.
So there you go. Even a man with the intellect of Woody Allen admits that his brain is only his second favourite organ. Woody Allen's movies are definitely of the cerebral variety. He even had a go at imagining exactly how the brain works and makes decisions, especially in difficult nerve-wracking scenarios. Like, for example, a dinner date where you are hoping to get lucky. So here is the brain as a control centre, like the bridge of the Starship Enterprise, with the entire body being controlled by Captain Kirk and his crew.
Brain room. Come in, motor function 12. Check. His leg itches.
Scratch the left leg.
The leg has been scratched.
Brain to stomach, brain to stomach.
Stomach to brain. Over.
Food coming down.
What kind?
Fettuccine.
Jesus Christ. Italian food coming down.
Brain to eyes. Come in.
Eyes to brain. Over.
Focus on the dinner date. I want to check out something, please.
Do you want the whole body?
Yes, please.
My place or your place? To me, it doesn't matter where we do it.
Mission control, mission control. Prepare for launching, prepare for launching. It looks like they're gonna do it.
Engines burn, engines burn. Stand by.
Well, here we go again.
You get the picture anyway. That's taken from a movie called Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Afraid to Ask, and proving once again exactly where a man's brain's priorities lie. In reality, the brain is the least understood of all the body's organs. In fact, our exploration of how the brain works is only in its infancy. But researchers at Trinity College in Dublin are now at the forefront of this type of research, specifically research into how our brains go about processing information and making decisions. Dr. Redmond O'Connell is Assistant Professor of Neuroscience at Trinity College Dublin, a man for whom the brain is, I assume, the favourite organ. Tell me about your research.
Essentially, what we're trying to understand is how the brain allows us to make decisions. Mm-hmm. Now, when we think about decisions, we think about things like, what am I going to eat for dinner tonight, or what am I going to buy my friend for Christmas? But in fact, practically anything that we do involves making a decision. So even if you're driving along and you arrive at a traffic light, you have to decide whether the light is red or green. And those kinds of decisions, subjectively, they feel very instantaneous, very automatic. You just know the light is red or the light is green. But actually, when you're thinking about how the brain performs that, how the brain actually achieves that, it's much more complicated than we think. And the reality is that the brain has a problem. It's constantly bombarded with information from all angles. So through our vision, through our hearing, through our feelings, we're constantly getting all this information. The brain has to somehow still arrive at really concrete decisions about what we should do. An example of a kind of unreliable, a difficult decision that we might have to make would be if, for example, you're driving at late at night on a country road and it's very dark and you've got your full headlamps on. One of the main things you'd be concerned about is dropping your headlamps when another car is coming in the other direction. But that's quite difficult to spot. And you want to try and spot it as early as possible. So you're looking for a change in light ahead, or maybe in the verge ahead. And we might see a sort of gradual change in the lighting ahead, but we have to make a decision at some point. Right, I'm sure now that there is actually something happening and there's a car coming, I'm going to drop my headlamps.
I better dip my headlamps.
I better dip my headlamps. And actually, that's just an example of the kind of difficult decision the brain has to make. And what we're seeing in our research is that, in fact, virtually any decision, anything that the brain perceives, involves a gradual decision-making process like that.
Now, you said that's a difficult decision. But when I'm doing that, it's nothing difficult about it at all. I don't even think about it. I just know, here comes the other car, dip my headlights.
Yeah, exactly.
There goes the other car, it's gone past, put on the headlights
again. But if
you're
coming along a long straight stretch and the car is coming towards you, you're not going to dip your headlights if it's a half a mile away. So you see it coming towards you, getting nearer and you're getting nearer.
Yeah,
to it.
As the light gets more intense,
yes,
that's when I dip my headlights.
But
what I'm saying is, for me, that's not a complicated decision. It's just, okay, I know. But you're saying in the brain it's a complicated
decision. So we heard a clip from the Woody Allen film there where in reality, and it's actually quite a good analogy, in reality the brain is this processing machine that has all these different parts that are doing different jobs. Now if we had to be aware and conscious of everything the brain was doing when we're performing these simple everyday tasks, we wouldn't get anywhere. So if you had to think, move my left foot, move my right foot, move my left foot, move my right foot to walk, and think about every muscle you have to move in order to make
that
your legs move,
mad.
You wouldn't get anywhere. You wouldn't get anything done in your day. So luckily, the brain has evolved to allow us to do a lot of these things automatically outside of our conscious awareness. So that's really good and really important. So what we're trying to do now is actually look under the bonnet and actually look at these building blocks.
How it does that.
Of how the brain
So what kind of
that.
Research did you do? Did you use any guinea pigs? And who were the guinea pigs? Were they real guinea pigs or were they pig pigs?
So we actually used human guinea pigs, so we're very grateful to people who just come and volunteer to take part in our experiments, which take place in Trinity College.
And are they wired up to things so you can measure their brains?
Exactly. So what we do is we use a technique that's called EEG, electroencephalography is what EEG stands for. But basically what we're doing is putting electrodes on people's scalps. You don't feel anything, they're not uncomfortable to wear or anything like that. But what they do is they pick up the electrical activity that the neurons in your brain produce. So when you're certain regions of your brain are doing something, they produce this electrical activity which we can measure. And the important thing there is that the brain works extremely quickly. For example, there's a really simple task where on a computer I flash up either the word yes or the word no, and I tell you, click the left mouse button when the word yes appears, mm-hmm. click the right button when the word no appears. Very simple. But we're actually capable of making a response within 200 to 300 milliseconds. So it's, again, in our experience, almost instantaneous. But there's so much that happens from the point that the information hits the retina and the eye to the point that you actually click the mouse button. There's so much happening in the brain in those 200 milliseconds that we're trying to understand. So it's really important to be actually able to measure that. And that's what where the EEG comes in.
Mm-hmm.
It allows us to actually observe these different aspects of the brain's machinery that contribute to you being able to make a decision. We can measure them, we can watch them. What we're trying to do is get a much better handle on exactly how they work. And that's really important as well in terms of understanding why sometimes we make mistakes, why sometimes we have problems making decisions. And that's obviously a prominent issue with people with brain disorders. It's quite common to have problems on cognitive tasks and in making decisions. And there's a lot of different reasons why someone might make a mistake on a task. Like, again, take the really simple yes or no tasks I mentioned earlier, or looking for an oncoming vehicle at night. There's lots of different reasons why you might make the same mistake. So, for example, you failed to drop your headlights. It might have been because you weren't paying attention. It might have been because you didn't care. It might have been because you didn't process the information properly. So you didn't really see the lighting changing. You didn't see the light coming. Or you might have had problems with the movement required to dip your headlamps. So there's lots of different reasons there, but the same outcome. And so if we can actually look inside the brain in this kind of way, we can potentially establish then why a particular person is having a problem on a particular task and get a much better sense of what's actually going on.
Or in that case, it could be just a bad driver.
Or they could be a bad driver.
You know, I mean, many times people have driven behind me with their full lights on.
Yeah.
And they don't even, not even aware of the fact they're full eyes on, or they don't care.
Yeah, but that's a decision too, in a sense. That's what their brain is telling them not to care.
That's yet another example.
But is it?
Well, I mean, yes. That's obviously not impinging, like you should be doing this. So your brain doesn't realise that this is something that is causing annoyance to somebody else or something that you should
be
doing.
Or is dangerous.
Or
like
whatever.
Tailgating. You know,
are there
right
different places
somebody?
In your brain where these decisions are taken? Is it the front of your brain, the back? Is it all over? Or are there certain parts that produce the energy when you're the neuron and electricity when you're actually measuring them for decisions on the computer for yes or no?
Yeah, well, there do seem to be different parts of the brain involved in making decisions. And that's another interesting area is that, again, as I mentioned before, a lot of the decisions we make are quite automatic without us really being aware of them. So a good example is actually if you're asleep at night and you're a New Yorker in an apartment in Manhattan, and there's all sorts of noise from traffic going on outside, that won't wake you up because you're used to it. So there might be a car beeping or a fire engine going by. It won't wake you up.
You switch it off,
you filter it out. Whereas if you're a New Yorker in an apartment in Manhattan and you're a parent and your baby is crying in the room next door, generally that will wake you up. So we actually even have the ability to make decisions when we're sleeping. The brain is still receiving information and making a decision, right, I have to wake up and respond to that, even though it's outside of our awareness. And so that's another interesting aspect of decision making. And it seems that there are different regions of the brain that are involved in making different decisions. But there are also certain regions of the brain, probably at the front of the brain, that have a kind of general role, particularly in giving us an awareness of the decisions we're making and also in setting goals, which is very important. That's good. As you mentioned with the driver, who might be a bad driver, who might be tailgating you, part of the problem there is they might not have actually set themselves the goal of not bothering the driver in front. So that's an important aspect about, we only make decisions if they're relevant to what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, but that one for doing it in your sleep is good, because I have children, but before I had children I could sleep through anything, because whatever noise there was at night was nothing to do with me, and my brain seemed to know this. And then when the baby came, we thought, Lord, we'll never wake up when the baby cries. Not a bit of it. You know, whinging, nearly turning over in the cot, you'd be wakened up because this was noise that was of great relevance. And how the brain suddenly knew, I was very impressed with this, with my ability. Must say I have never lost it now, even though the baby's along, still grown up.
But would you hear the baby
next door? I hear
the key
coming the door now when the 21-year-old sneaks in at 3 in the morning. I can hear the key and then I don't say a word. I just know he's in and it's all right. But I can hear that and it wakes me up, yeah.
Now, Richard, horror. I'm just wondering, are you processing all of this in your brain? You're staying very quiet.
Well, yes, I am very perplexed by this appallingly difficult subject. Raymond, one has the sense of oneself.
Maybe even Redmond.
Even that I get wrong.
Cross the name right now.
You see how my brain functions. Dreadful thing altogether. It's increasingly deficient as time goes on, you see. But anyway, Redmond. We have the sense of ourselves as one thing, one entity, a kind of managing director sitting inside, who gets all this information from neurons fed into him constantly. And he leaves it build up in the various trays, and eventually a point comes where he says, well, now I am going to have to do something about this. I'm heading down this road and a car is coming. It's still 2 kilometres away, but the lights are very bright. And at a certain point, it triggers a decision. And I say, look, tell the motor neurons to switch off, switch down the lights to dip, please, and don't waste any time. So forth. So now we have this strange idea of these neurons, the nerves are big bundles of neurons like telephone cable pairs, all working together, millions, countless millions of them, feeding information all over the place. But somehow out of all of this must come a unitary self who makes decisions. Unconscious ones, conscious, semi-conscious, doesn't matter. There's still some kind of central managing director, a fella sitting in an office up there who's in bad form most of the time and you don't cross him, and he's the one that makes the decision. How does that model suit your knowledge of the brain?
Well, it's close enough. I mean, a big issue, I suppose, in understanding how the brain works is what people are realising now in recent decades in the research that they've been doing is that not every bit of information actually gains access to what we call consciousness or awareness or that managing director. The managing director only actually, it would seem, deals with certain types of information. Because like, as I mentioned before, there's no need for the managing director to worry about what every single worker in his company is doing at any given moment in time. It's the kind of more important high-level decisions that we need to make. So we don't need to monitor our walking. You don't need to think about how you drink a glass of water or whatever it may be. It's quite surprising that actually the importance of consciousness for controlling our behaviour, it's a relatively controversial subject in the field. And there's not necessarily a great understanding of what consciousness is for. And there's a surprising amount of things that we seem to be able to do without needing to be conscious of it. One of the things that seems to be really important, that consciousness seems to be really important for, is actually communication. So being able to actually talk to each other and explain what we're doing, what we're feeling, what we want to do, and to understand what others are doing. And that's one of the things that makes us human, that distinguishes us as human. So it's a very important function. But in terms of our day-to-day decision-making, it's not necessarily a done deal or that clear what the managing director is for. I suppose in terms of decision-making, one of the interesting things, one of the things that makes the brain amazing, as I mentioned before, its ability to actually reach a definite, concrete decision about an environment that's so complicated and so unreliable sometimes that often the information we're receiving isn't very good. And yet we have to just say, right, I'm going to click the button, I'm going to turn the lights down, even though you can't necessarily be 100% sure. And that's been something that's actually troubled kind of researchers for decades. How does the brain do that? How is it so good at doing that? Because if you actually measure activity in, say, this, what we call the sensory regions of the brain, so the regions that are receiving visual information or auditory information, the activity in those regions is quite unreliable at any one moment in time. And yet we still make these accurate decisions. So a theory that was proposed was that maybe the way the brain works then is like a judge does in a court case. It doesn't use one piece of information to make a decision. It actually gathers information from lots of sources. And once it has enough information to be sure, it makes a decision. And that was a theory that was there for a long time. You can trace it back to the 1940s. And we in Trinity College and others have kind of contributed to showing that this does actually seem to fit with how the brain works. And what we have identified is signals in the brain that seem to perform this role of gathering information over time. And that once this signal reaches a certain level, the person will actually reliably make a decision. So we can monitor people as they're making decisions, observe the different building blocks of the decision process in the brain and see this kind of building confidence, building certainty up to the point where a button is clicked or a decision is made.
I'm thinking you must be exhausted because this must be going around your head constantly.
Yeah.
Why did I do that? How did I manage to scratch my nose just then? But is this what you think about all the time?
Well, I think about it in a more abstract sense, so it doesn't really change the way I think of myself, I suppose, because I just don't have access to these. You know, when I see a red light, I just see a red light the same way you do. I can't suddenly access the really rapid processes in the brain that have managed to pull that information together and give me that decision. It's just something that, it's a memo that lands on the managing director's desk, and that's the way it is.
And if we know this much then about how brains work when they work, is there a way then of learning how brains don't work when people get heart attacks or strokes or start getting dementia or these sort of things, that bits of the brain are breaking down? Can you be able to relate your research to understanding this sort of thing?
Well, I think, you know, ultimately that's our goal. That's what we're doing. I mean, we're obviously just interested in the brain because it's an interesting question, but ultimately what we're also trying to do is to help people and make people's lives better. So that's one of the big things in our institute in Trinity, is to try and understand impairments of the brain and disorders of the brain. And we think that one of the best ways of doing that is to get a really good understanding of how the brain works first and foremost. And what we're trying to do is break down and find a way of measuring the different stages that the brain goes through in making a decision. If we can monitor all of those, then if we bring in somebody who is having problems on a particular task, we can monitor those signals and identify exactly where is the problem coming from. That's our goal. That's
what
we're trying to do.
Do you think?
And ultimately then hopefully to improve how we go about trying to treat those problems. That's further down the road. I mean, it's something we're also exploring in our research.
Well, you talk about the building blocks and the brain making the decision. And how do you explain a wrong decision when you know the decision is wrong in the first place of what you're about to do, but still you go ahead and do it?
Yeah.
Society tells them it's wrong. They still bloody well go ahead and do it.
Right. They think for them it is the right thing to do. They've decided.
Yeah. Do they really?
This is kind of a separate area. Is this how we set our goals? How we decide on what it is that we want to do?
They're moral issues, are they?
They're moral issues.
Matters, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
They would say,
and again, there's lots of really interesting research on that and how they seem to be a combination of kind of cold hard logic, you know, decisions about costs and benefits, but also emotion plays in as well. And that's an
risk
interesting
analysis
idea,
I suppose.
Yeah, but then there's also a kind of just an emotional component that you can't really put into words necessarily, but we kind of feel what's right and what's wrong. And again, that's kind of this fundamental idea of what information the brain uses to make a decision. And that's something that we're really interested in.
Well, and the best kind of luck. And thank you very much indeed. When will you be finished your studies into this particular area?
Or does
it just go on?
I suppose.
I was going to say it just goes on and on and on because it's building block. Anyway, Redmond, thank you very much indeed.
My pleasure.
Visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney.